from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into the show on this Friday evening, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. I'm your host, Ryan Porth, joined in studio by Robbie Stanley of NHL.com this evening. The Preds get a win last night at home against Montreal, 3-1. They head out on a two-game road trip starting Saturday night, tomorrow night in Vegas, and then next Tuesday in Dallas, the city in which they will play the Winter Classic on New Year's Day. Robbie, how are we doing this evening?
Lovely, Porth. Hope you're doing well.
This is your perfect weather, cold and rainy.
It's terrible. It is truly awful.
Last night, it wasn't this kind of weather, but the Preds did get something they didn't get Tuesday night, which is 2 points, a 3-1 win over the Montreal Canadiens. And I thought it was a much-needed bounce-back performance. It wasn't perfect, but the fact that Ryan Hartman scored, snapping a 27-game scoreless streak, Brian Boyle got on the score sheet with a nice slap shot goal in the third period. I thought those were positive signs when it comes to the secondary scoring, them chipping in a 3-1 win.
Well, it had to happen at some point because it has not happened at all the last 2-3 weeks. And that's something that's great that it happened last night. Ryan Hartman gets off the schneid. I think it was 27 or 28 games that he had gone without a goal. So you know that one felt really good.
He took the monkey off his back.
Literally, and tossed it into the stands. Did not quite kick it like Ryan Ellis did earlier in the year. But there's a lot of monkeys being taken off the back in Preds games so far this year. And look, that's important. I thought Brian Boyle last night, even if you don't count the goal, I mean, he was outstanding. I thought he was around the net. He was creating havoc on the power play. He was creating havoc 5-on-5. Had some good chances. I think better chances earlier on in the game than he had on the one he scored on. So that to me is very encouraging. I think Boyle is starting to find his place on this team and in this locker room. So that part is good.
The more I hear from him in interviews and the more I see him on the ice with this team, the more I think it might be beneficial for both him and the team to bring him back and not just be a rental.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think he's something that they don't have. I mean, that big body in front of the net. You know, me and John Glennon from The Athletic were talking about this a little bit last night. There are just so many plays out there that are happening right now when he's on the ice in front of the net that are just foreign to us that we haven't seen since Patrick Hornquist. Not necessarily that he's as good as Patrick Hornquist in front of the net, but just that he's there. Like, Victor Arvidsson was the only guy going to the front of the net on this entire team. So that's been a nice change of pace, and I thought last night he played really well in that regard. I thought the Predators in general, their first period was really good. I really liked what they did in the first period. They came out and started off the game really well.
Carey Price made some great saves.
Carey Price was really good, and that's been a major bugaboo for this team is the first period and how they've come out to start games. And I thought, even in the Detroit game, I thought their first period was okay. And then Montreal, I thought they really played well in the first period. But then you come out in the second period, and it was a total stinker. I mean, they somehow scored a goal in the second period to lead that game 1-0. And Pekka-Rinne just had to be incredible, which I thought that's, again, another good sign because things have not gone great for Pekka-Rinne as of late. But you come back, you respond in the third period, especially after the way the third period went against Detroit, and they did not play well at all, weren't very happy with that third period. I thought they came out last night in the third period, and even though Montreal scored a goal, they really kind of laid the hammer down in the second half of that third period, which is encouraging to see. And now we'll see if they can build on it against some better competition in Vegas and then a tough road game in Dallas against a team that's given them a lot of problems so far this year.
Two teams that will likely make the playoffs come April. The one player that we haven't mentioned in this is Victor Arvidsson, scoring again. Oh, he now has 26 goals in 36 games this season. He had 10 in January. He now has 7 in February. I mean, everyone calls it Filbruary.
Yeah.
But we might have to come up with something for Arvidsson in February, maybe Arvruary or something like that.
It's going to have to be something better than that, but that's okay.
But he's been fantastic. And the fact that he missed 24 games and is still on pace for 42 goals is incredible.
He's been he's just crazy good. It's unbelievable how good he's been. And you keep waiting for like this streak and tear that he's on to stop. And there just doesn't seem to be any sign of it. Even last night, his line, the Johansson line last night, played their worst game they've played in a long time. They were not good last night. But even in the third period, all it takes is one chance. Johansson intercepts the puck in the neutral zone, comes back the other way, and bang, it's in the back of the net. So yeah, that's how good that line can be, that even when they're not on their A game. I mean, if you take a look at some of the numbers last night, Shea Weber's unit for Montreal did a pretty good job of shutting down that top line for the Predators last night. But all you got to do is give them an inch, and they'll take it. And that's what they did last night. So even when they're not at their best, they're still contributing offensively. And Victor Arvidsson in particular, I mean, good Lord, imagine if he stayed healthy the whole year. You're talking 50 goals.
At least.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how good he's been.
He could have been knocking on the door of 60.
Yeah.
And I'm not, like, no, exaggerating on that.
We're not making this up. This is you stretch these numbers out. I think it's literally like a 58, 59 goal pace that he's on. So it's crazy how good he's been.
59.
Yeah, so far this year. So, you know, like I said before, we talked about this a couple times ago when I was on the show here. Forsberg, Arvidsson, Johansson, I think every single one of those guys have gotten better this year, which is really scary because they were really good before.
And they might still get better in the years to come, given their age. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth alongside Robbie Stanley. Robbie, you mentioned Pekka-Rinne. I thought last night was very good. You mentioned the second period, made 21 saves in the second period, a lot of high danger chances in that period, 34 saves overall on the night. Thought it was a rock-solid effort, one of his best games of the new calendar year, probably his best game since the 35-save win he had at Colorado right before the All-Star break.
Yeah.
No, and when you consider the last 18 games, ever since, you know, December 17th, the 18 games prior, he had a 5-10-2 record, 896 save percentage. It was good to see him have a performance like that one last night.
Yeah, he really needed it. He talked about it after the game, too. He's well aware that his stats and his performances of late have been a little bit of a roller coaster. It's been up and down, and quite frankly, he struggled a little bit in the last month or so. Now, some of that, obviously, is on the defense. They have not been great in front of him at times, but some of that's on him as well. I mean, you think back to the Detroit game the other night, that third goal that Athanasiou scored that ultimately ended up being the game winner. I mean, that's just not a good goal. It's a bad goal.
He wants that one back.
Yeah, and he wants that back. He talked about it after the game. So, he talked about last night, you know, it really felt good for him to kind of come in there and have a 60-minute effort the way that he did. And who knows, maybe that's a launching pad for him going forward now, because we're getting to the point of the season now where you're really going to need good goaltending. You're going to have to see him start to ramp up his game heading into the playoffs, because as we all know, goaltending is so important in the playoffs. You think back to 2 years ago and how good Pekka-Rinne was in their run to the Cup final, and what a difference that made. And then conversely, you think back to last year in the playoffs he had, and it wasn't very good, and that ultimately ends up being the difference. So they really have to make sure that he is on his game and that his confidence is very high heading into the playoffs. And I thought last night was very important. I think he really needed that game.
Now, the key is for that kind of effort, that kind of workmanlike effort that the Preds had last night, where the Jofa line didn't have their A game, but they still found a way to win. Pekka-Rinne still had a great game. Now the key is for them to build upon that and not just have that be an isolated game.
Yeah.
Like, you look back to the Washington Capitals game in January, and it's a head-scratcher because it's in that game, that one game, a 7-2 win where they just obliterated the defending champs, was in the middle of a five-game stretch in which they lost four games. But that one game, that 7-2 win was fantastic, but they couldn't carry that into the next game against Winnipeg. Last night can't just be an isolated effort, and then they just go to Vegas and lay an egg.
Particularly with the secondary scoring, it's got to come. I mean, it has not been there lately, and we talked about it for a couple weeks now. At some point, you're going to need offense from somebody other than that Johansson line. I mean, Roman Josi has been trying his best to generate offense from the back end. Sometimes I think he's trying a little bit too hard.
I'd agree.
From the back end to generate some offense, because it's just simply not there from the rest of the group. So Ryan Hartman gets on the board last night. Brian Boyle gets on the board last night. I mean, you're still needing stuff from guys like Kyle Turris and Kevin Fiala and Craig Smith. And Nick Bonino's played really well as of late. He's starting to cool down a little bit too. I mean, there's a lot of guys that need to step up their game and produce offensively, because, you know, we talked about this heading into the first round last year against Colorado. Yeah, they're dangerous, but they're a one-line team. And quite frankly, the Predators have become a one-line team as of late, and you're not going to win a Stanley Cup that way. It's just not going to happen. So at some point, whether it's via trade or it's via other guys in the lineup that have been here for a while and just have not been producing as of late, one of those two things are going to have to jumpstart this team, because if they don't, there's just no way they're going to make a deep playoff run. I mean, you saw it when they made the cup final. I mean, you got contributions from everybody. I mean, James Neal and Ryan Ellis and Pontus Aberg, just random guys. Auberg at the time. Recently, Aberg. Freddie Gaudreau came in. I mean,
but think round by round. The first round against Chicago, Harry Zolnerchuk scored a huge goal in game two of that series. Cody McLeod in round two against St. Louis had a game-winning goal. Round three, you mentioned Auberg and you mentioned Gaudreau in the Stanley Cup final. I mean, you need those kind of guys to step up in the playoffs.
Yeah,
and
you
can't just rely on your first line.
Right, and you need them in timely situations too, important situations. I thought, you know, last night, Brian Boyle, that's a big-time goal. That's a huge goal in a big situation. You need guys like that.
That goal looked so easy.
It really did.
Like, it was a slap shot that stayed on the ice and found its way through.
Yeah, right through the wickets there. And great play by Josi and Subban to drop that off for him.
That was nice.
As Ryan Johansson likes to call it, looping and swooping. But it was a great shot by Boyle there.
So last night, the Preds 3-1 win over Montreal wasn't the only good news for Preds fans. Winnipeg lost. They've been up and down lately. They lost last night 4-1 at home against Colorado. They've lost 4 of 6 since they had that 9-3 beatdown of Anaheim. While the Preds have been up and down in this last month, it's not like Winnipeg's run away with the Central. I mean, it is still there for the taking. Now, the chances are the Jets, in all likelihood, will still win the division. But it's not impossible for the Preds to come back and win that.
No, all it takes is a winning streak. I mean, that's what it takes at this point. You roll off 5-6 wins in a row, and all of a sudden the games in hand that Winnipeg has probably don't matter that much, because the way Winnipeg's been playing lately, they're not going to roll off that many in a row. So the other part of that equation is now you've got a little bit of back pressure too, because St. Louis is right behind you now. I think they've got 4 games in hand
on
the Predators at this point, and they've won, you know, 8 games in a row, whatever it is right now. So they're playing extremely well.
So listen to this. St. Louis, back on December 16th, lost to Calgary 7-2. According to sportsclubstats.com, that night when they lost, they had a 3% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah.
In a span of less than 2 months, their percentage is now 91% at making the playoffs, according to sportsclubstats.com. And they've only gone 17-7-1 in that stretch, which is great, but it's not like it was 23-2-1.
Right.
Like, that's just how bad the West has been outside of those 5 teams: Nashville, Winnipeg, Calgary, San Jose, and Vegas.
Yeah, but it also, we talk all the time about teams getting hot at the right time, and I think everybody before the season kind of expected more out of the St. Louis Blues, and I think now we're starting to see the team we thought they could be. I mean, Tarasenko's scoring now. Ryan O'Reilly's been great all year. They're getting the goaltending now that they weren't getting earlier on in the year. So if you're the Predators, I think you have to be aware of that, the fact that if you're not on your game, I mean, you could look behind you at some point and the Blues could be 4 points or 2 points back. So that's another thing, not only Winnipeg in front of you that you have to keep in mind, you also have to keep in mind that St. Louis is kind of nipping at your heels right now. Even though it doesn't seem like it with the points behind they are, those games in hand, they're a big deal.
What does it say on a rear view mirror? Objects
may be closer than they appear.
There you go.
St. Louis Blues, baby.
Absolutely. Coming up next, we'll try to identify the cause of this roller coaster season so far for the Preds. Plus, if the Preds do make a trade by the deadline, I have a theory why they might make it sooner than deadline day on February 25th. That's all coming up next. He's Robbie Stanley of NHL.com. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Ryan Porth, joined by Robbie Stanley of NHL.com in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios. The Preds win 3-1 last night. They travel to Vegas tomorrow night, the start of a 2-game road trip, where that road trip will finish Tuesday night in Dallas. Robbie, this regular season so far for the Nashville Predators has been a roller coaster. If you take the first 16 games, they went 13-3, and they looked like they did last year when they won the President's Trophy. The next 23 games after that, they were decimated by injury. They went 9-12-2. Then they won 5 of 6. Then they lost 4 of 5. Then they won 5 of 6. Then they lost 3 in a row before last night's win. In your opinion, what has been the biggest cause for this roller coaster?
Well, I think there's two things. The biggest cause to me is the injuries. I think that's been a major part of it. If you take a look at their record with everybody in the lineup, it's really good. So it's not like they're out there just struggling at full strength all the time. But I do think there have been some scoring issues this year outside of that top line, and that's something that is not just a recent thing. It's been there all year long, and there have been times where you've had contributions from other guys on a consistent basis. I think back to earlier in the year when Ryan Hartman was kind of going and playing really well offensively. Colton Sissons has played well at times offensively this year, but it doesn't seem like they've ever all been playing well offensively at once this year, which I think is going to have to happen at some point if you're going to make a deep playoff run. So that's one thing I think that's led to the inconsistencies defensively at times this year, even with injuries or without injuries, haven't been very good. I mean, there have been times this year where defensively they just haven't been there. Now, there have also been times, I think, back to the game in Toronto or the game in Montreal, or even to a certain extent last night against Montreal, they've been really good defensively. They've played very well in the defensive zone. They've locked it down. But sometimes I think they've gotten a little sloppy in that area too. And the goaltending, especially in recent weeks, has not been there to bail them out as often as it was earlier in the year. So there are several factors to it. And if you think back, we talked about it before the season even began. I think we all expected that this year in the regular season would not go quite as smoothly as it did a year ago. Last year, basically nothing went wrong for them in the regular season. They were pretty much healthy the whole time. They never really had to deal with any sort of adversity. I mean, Ryan Ellis missed the first half of the year, but even with him out, they were still pretty good. And when he came back, I mean, they were just lights out good. So I think this year we all knew it would probably be a little bit more of a bumpy ride, and it has been. So not necessarily something that I'm thrown off guard by. I am a little bit thrown off guard by the fact that the secondary scoring, particularly with Fiala, has not been there. Craig Smith has kind of been what he's always been, which is a streaky player this year. And then it's been difficult to evaluate Kyle Turris fully because he's been hurt for the majority of the year. But I still think there's more to give from him as well. So until some of these other guys start to step up and contribute offensively, I think you're going to see this. I mean, I think they're going to be an up-and-down team because when you're relying on one line like they have been, it's difficult to get consistent results.
Well, and we've seen that with Colorado, too, this season, where they've been relying on that McKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog line, and they've been great most of the season, but that hasn't been yielding great results for the team. And you've mentioned multiple times already on this show how you feel like this team right now, until the secondary scoring can pick up the slack, that they are a one-line team.
Yep.
Terry Crisp said as much Monday night on Preds Insiders that this is a one-line team. And then Jeremy Roenick earlier today on Darren and Donick, he agrees.
I see a one-line team that is struggling to find consistency in their offense. You see last night you have your secondary scorer score. Ryan Hartman scores, Brian Boyle scores. And you have your most consistent player on the team, and Victor Arvidsson continues to play well. But when you have other players chip in offensively, you have a tendency to win more hockey games. And this is one of the biggest problems that the Predators had, is they're a one-line hockey team. Nobody else has helped them offensively. And Pekka can only do so much to keep the puck out of the net. They have to get some sort of offensive support to allow him to take a little pressure off him.
Jeremy Roenick of NBC Sports talking about the fact that he thinks this Preds team is a one-line team. And when you think of a lot of the key contributors from last season, Kevin Fiala, Craig Smith, Kyle Turris, that second line that was so good last season, all are on pace for fewer points this season.
Yep.
Callie Yarncroak had a career year last year, on pace for fewer points. Ryan Hartman, who David Poile gave a first-round pickup for at the deadline last year, on pace for fewer points this season. A lot of guys who had career years, Ryan Ellis, a lot of guys who had career years last year are on pace for fewer points. I think it's only natural that is a big reason why they are going through this roller coaster.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not just the forwards. I mean, some of it comes from the back end, too. This has historically been a team that relies on offense from the back end. Now, Roman Josi is providing a lot of that. Mattias Ekholm has been very good in that area as well, better than he ever has been in that area offensively. But P.K. Subban was hurt for a lot of this year. I think he missed 19 games. He hasn't been as good offensively this year. Ryan Ellis has not been very good offensively this year. So when you factor in those things, and then, I mean, the elephant in the room that we've talked about all year long is the power play. I mean, you're not getting the same production on the power play. Those points aren't coming on the power play like they have been in the past. So that factors into it as well. So there are several different reasons why the offense has been inconsistent all season long. Power play is a big part of it. Injuries are a big part of it. But I think some of it is, if you're a guy like Kyle Turris or Kevin Fiala, you got to look in the mirror and say, all right, I mean, this is, you're getting close to the time right now where you've got to step up and produce. And, you know, we keep talking about the second line. Well, right now, those guys aren't on the second line together.
I know, I mean, right?
Kyle Turris was on the fourth line two nights ago. I mean, Kevin Fiala was on the second line with Turris last night, but Smith was on the third. So they're trying to mix and match and find things that work on a consistent basis. And so far, Laviolette has not been able to find that, which is why I wonder what they might do here in the next week, week and a half. But let's say they don't do anything. At some point, one of those guys, or all of those guys, are going to have to step up and contribute if this team wants to make a deep run.
The other thing, the last thing I want to bring up in this discussion before we move on to the trade deadline, is we've heard multiple people come on these airwaves on our different shows and say that they feel like this is a Preds team that is just waiting for the playoffs. Do you see that? And if you see that, that's another thing that could be contributing to the up and down nature of this regular season.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see that. I do think there's something to the fact that last year they were so committed to winning every game because they thought home ice advantage was going to be really important. And as it turned out, it wasn't. I mean, they got beat three times by Winnipeg, got beat once by Colorado at home ice in the playoffs. So there are four playoff losses on home ice. It ended up not really being that big a deal. So I do think, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, there's not as much of an emphasis on that this year. I don't think they're just out there going through the motions and waiting for the playoffs to start. Number one, because I think that's a terrible way to approach things. It's very difficult to just flip the switch and turn it on once the playoffs come around and be at your best when you haven't been at your best all year. So I think that part of it's very difficult. But I do think there is something to the fact that this group, with the experiences they've been through, they know that ultimately what they're going to be judged on is the playoffs. So, you know, if you finish second or third in the division, is it really the end of the world heading in the playoffs? No, it's not. As long as you get in, you've got a chance to make a deep run like they did a couple years ago. So I do think there is something to that, but I don't buy the fact that they're out there just, you know, kind of skating around, lollygagging, and just waiting for the playoffs to get here. I do think that is a terrible way to approach things, and I don't think that's what they're doing.
Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth alongside Robbie Stanley. So the trade deadline is coming up on February 25th, 10 days away. Robbie, I have a theory into why I think David Poile, if he makes a trade, is going to make it sooner than deadline day. So the Preds have four games in between now and the deadline, right? Mm-hmm. They've got at Vegas, they've got at Dallas, then home next Thursday against L.A., then home next Saturday against Colorado. By that point, after those games, the Preds would be at 64 games played mm-hmm. by the 2 p.m. deadline on Monday the 25th. That not only do they play on Monday the 25th, they also play on Tuesday the 26th. So you would basically have 16, 17 games remaining in the regular season with some practice time for the rest of the regular season for a new acquisition to get acclimated. That's not a lot of time.
No.
Especially when you're, if it's a big name player, like all these national reports are, that maybe they might go get someone like an Artemi Panarin or Mark Stone or what have you. That's not a lot of time. So I kind of think if the Preds are going to do something, they could do something next week sometime and get the ball rolling on all these trades, because they lead the NHL right now in 60 games played.
Yeah.
And a lot of teams have games in hand on them. They might want to get ahead of the curve and get their guy early and not wait until 1:59 p.m. on Monday the 25th.
I agree. No, I think there's something to that. Now, the flip side of that is they are at 60 games right now. They have played the most games in the league, and they're going to have some schedule opportunities in March that come around. I think there's a week in March where they're here the whole week and they've got like three practice days scheduled in a week, which is just unheard of.
There's two of those weeks in March.
Which is unheard of this time of year. So that part of it, I think, could work to their favor. But I agree. It's one thing to practice and go through all that and go through the systems and learn new systems and all that stuff. Being in a game and getting acclimated in game situations is a different thing. And the fact of the matter is, even if they made a trade right this second, they still don't have a lot of time to have somebody come in and acclimate. So I think you're right. If David Poile is going to make a move, I would not be surprised at all to see him do that sooner, just because you can bring him in, you can get your lines going, get your power play units going if you decide to switch that up. That all takes time to get used to and to acclimate to. So I would not be surprised at all if the opportunities are there and David Poile ultimately decides that he's willing to give up the assets it's going to take to get one of those big name guys. I think he'll do that sooner rather than wait till the last minute.
I mean, you just look at Brian Boyle last night. It was his fifth game, and we're right. talking about how good he was. I mean, it's not like he was bad in the first four games as a Nashville Predator, but it just shows you it takes time. It's not going to happen instantly. So this is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You mentioned the big names. Of the big names, if the Preds were to acquire one, which one would be the best fit? We'll get into that next. He's Robbie Stanley on NHL.com. I'm Ryan Porth. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show on this Friday evening. If you're tuning in for Tackling Music City, Buck Rising is coming up at 7 o'clock. Preds Insiders brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios with Robbie Stanley this evening of NHL.com. The Preds back at it tomorrow night in Vegas. Pregame at 8, puck drop at 9. All the action heard on these airwaves, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie, last night after the game, I turned on the 31 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick. And I've been listening to like every podcast they've done in the last month just to get any sort of nugget, whether it's the Preds or the Jets or whatever may be the case with the NHL trade deadline. And Elliot Friedman, as he also stated in his 31 Thoughts column, Elliot put Nashville down as one of his four, quote, big game hunters for the deadline. He listed the Flames, the Jets, the Islanders, and the Preds as four teams to really watch when it comes to these big names at the deadline, whether it's Artemi Panarin of Columbus or Mark Stone and Matt Duchene of the Ottawa Senators. And I find it fascinating that all of these national media members are listing Nashville when it comes to these guys, specifically Artemi Panarin.
Yeah.
When you look at Pierre LeBrun and Craig Custance and Scott Burnside and Elliot Friedman, I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? Like, there's got to be something to this and them not just speculating that Nashville could be among one of these, quote, big game hunters.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened too many times. There have been too many reports, I think, by too many different people for it to be just speculation. I think if you're an objective outsider looking in, it's not a huge secret that the Predators probably need another big gun if they're going to compete with Winnipeg and Vegas and some of these other teams in the Western Conference. I mean, you take a look at their lineup, and like we've talked about all show, the secondary scoring is just not there at the moment. But I do think if you're David Poile and you're looking around and you've got Panarin out there and you just assume that Mark Stone might be available and Matt Duchene might be available, you have to at least take a look at some of those guys if you're a team that believes they're in a Stanley Cup window like the Predators do believe. So, you know, you've heard Pierre LeBrun talk about many times how the Predators have been inquiring about Artemi Panarin and how he thinks that would be a great fit here. I agree. I think even if he is a rental, that would be a very good fit for this team. He's a guy you could plug in immediately on the second line, and there's a scoring threat right there. So
I think Artemi Panarin would be a great fit on 30 other teams.
It's not just the Predators. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And look, I mean, the other part of this you have to keep in mind is I don't think Winnipeg's just going to sit there.
No.
Like, and Ottawa Senators general manager Pierre Dorion was at the game last night for the Winnipeg Jets. Winnipeg Jets today at practice, their GM met with Dorion at practice today. So logically, you take a look at these things and something tells you there might be something going on between the Senators and the Jets. So if you're the Predators, and David Poile talked about this after he signed Brian Boyle, it's not necessarily just about what happens with your team that affects, you know, kind of the needs that you think you might have. What are other teams in your division doing? What are other teams in your conference doing to better themselves come trading deadline? So if you're the Predators, I think we've all known for about a year now that you're in direct competition with the Winnipeg Jets. And whatever they may do or not do at the trade deadline, I think affects the decisions that David Poile and company have to make.
So the three big rentals available are Artemi Panarin of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Matt Duchene, and Mark Stone of the Ottawa Senators. In order, those three, Robbie, which would be the best fits for this Preds team?
Well, I think number one, to me, Mark Stone. I think he's a stud offensively. great defensively as well. He's one of the best two-way forwards in the entire game. And I remember, I can't remember if it was Elliot Friedman or Pierre LeBrun coming out with an article sometime last summer talking about when he hits free agency. I mean, you're looking at $9.5-10 million range for the type of player that he is. I mean, he's that good. Analytically, he is one of the best players in the entire league, just in how he drives offense and then carries the play out of his own zone on defense to the offensive zone. And remind you, I mean, he's doing this on a terrible team. I mean, the Ottawa Senators are not good. So Mark Stone, for me, would be number one. I think he solves a scoring winger problem immediately, comes in on the second line, can play in pretty much any situation you want him to. To me, he would be number one on the list by far, I think.
So you mentioned Stone number one. How much of that, too, for the Preds, if you're thinking of this as David Poile, could it be, okay, Mark Stone is available. He had a lot of success with Kyle Turris when Turris was in Ottawa, and they were on the same line when they went to the Eastern Conference Final in 2017.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, I think. And you know, obviously, if you're Stone, I think you feel good about that, too, if you did get dealt to Nashville, that, okay, you know, I've played with Kyle Turris before, and we've had some success together there. The other part of it is this. I mean, you're talking about rental players. I mean, I think everybody pretty much assumes that Artemi Panarin, no matter where he goes, is going to hit the open market. Like, he's pretty much made it clear that he's going to go the route of free agency. So I think if you're the Predators, if you get Artemi Panarin, you almost have to approach it knowing that at the end of the day, he's probably not coming back. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the way it is. Things can happen. I mean, he could have a really good experience here and decide, okay, Nashville is the place I want to be. And that certainly is a possibility. But I think, logically speaking, you would have to assume that Panarin probably would not come back. I think there's a chance if you get Mark Stone, you could make your cap situation work to where you could get him to sign a long-term deal.
I mean, if Stone has been vocal earlier this season about how he would like to stay in Ottawa, surely he would have interest in being in Nashville long-term, right?
Yes.
You would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the hottest markets, not just in hockey, just in everyday life.
Yeah.
To move to.
No state income tax.
I would wonder if they did get Kyle, or if they did get Mark Stone, if Kyle Turris not only on the ice helps Mark Stone, but off the ice is kind of like, oh, kind of that recruiter of, we want to keep you around for a long period of time.
Yeah, and if you take a look at the Preds cap situation, and we won't spend a whole lot of time on this because this is a major hypothetical situation, but there's ways they could make that work. Like I said before with Panarin, they could make it work too, but I do think it's very difficult to imagine Artemi Panarin with everything that he's done and everything that he's said from him and his camp the last year, year and a half. It pretty much looks like they're going to free agency and they want to go that route. So I think if you're the Predators and you get Panarin, which by the way, he ranks number two on this list that we're talking about to me, I think you have to know that going in that's the ultimate all-in move because you know there's a pretty good chance he's not coming back at the end of the day there.
So you have Mark Stone number one. You have Artemi Panarin number two, which means Matt Duchene is number three in terms of how you would rank these available rentals at the trade deadline and how they would fit with Nashville. Do you have Duchene number three simply because he's a center and the other two are wingers?
Yes, although Duchene can play on the wing, and he has played on the wing before in his career in Colorado. I like Panarin the player and Stone the player a little bit more than I like Duchene. And Duchene's having a great time to have a career year going into a contract year. But I am a little concerned that, you know, Matt Duchene's track record of being a very good player is well known. Teams also, when Matt Duchene has been there, has not been very good. And whether that's the fault of him or just a coincidence of a situation, I have no idea. But that is a little bit concerning to me. I do think he could slide in and play very well for this Predators team if they decide to go get him. And there's no secret about it. I mean, they tried to get him last year. I mean, this has been something that's been a mutual interest, I think, from Duchene and the Predators. I mean, Duchene, I remember talking to him a couple years ago in Nashville, and he just went on for like 6 minutes unprovoked about how much he loves the city of Nashville, and he's a big-time country music guy. So I think off the ice, the fit would be great here in Nashville, and I think you'd have a great chance of re-signing him too if you did trade for Matt Duchene. The problem then becomes, how much are you going to pay him? He's probably going to ask for the Ryan Johansson contract. And to me, if you're not playing him as your top line center, you can't pay him as much as you pay Ryan Johansson.
So I agree.
There are many different things that are going to factor into that. But I do think he could play at center or on the wing here and fit in pretty well in the top six.
So last Friday on Preds Insiders, I had Adam Vinken of The Athletic in studio with me, and I put him on the spot with this question, and I'll put you on the spot with this question. What percentage chance would you give the Preds at the end of the day acquiring one of those three players?
I will put it at about 40%. And I don't say that as if I don't think it's going to happen in a major way. I just think there are so many factors going into it. Number one, they have to want to trade him to your team. So your offer has to be better than other teams wanting to go after him. Number two, David Poile and company have to be comfortable enough to get rid of the assets they're gonna ask for rental players, which, as we talked about, that's a high price to pay, knowing that there's a chance in a couple months that they may not be around anymore. So David Poile has to work through that. And you know, you just take a look at the situation right now. I say 40%, and people say, oh, well, he doesn't think it's going to happen. 40% to me in a situation like this is pretty high.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's, well, like we talked about before, there's a lot of smoke around the Predators and these rumors. And they're not just rumors being thrown out there. I mean, these are credible guys putting these things together, like Elliot Friedman, like Pierre LeBrun. So I do think where there's smoke, there's fire. I think they're heavily inquiring on these players. And at the end of the day, it just comes down to, number one, is Ottawa or Columbus comfortable enough with your offer to accept it? And if you're David Poile, how far are you willing to go within your pipeline or within your current roster to make those changes?
We'll hit pause on this conversation and pick it up after the break, because there was a high-level national media member who joined Morning Drive earlier this week that thinks, I don't know if the Preds are going to make that big splash. We'll delve into that coming up next. He's Robbie Stanley, NHL.com. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back into the show, Preds Insiders, on this Friday evening in Music City, USA. I'm Ryan Porth alongside Robbie Stanley of NHL.com. The Preds start their road trip tomorrow night in Vegas. Pregame at 8, puck drop at 9 right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Preds get a big 3-1 win last night against the Montreal Canadiens. We are 10 days away from the NHL trade deadline, and that's been the topic of conversation in these last couple segments. And Robbie, last segment we talked about all the big-name rentals, Artemi Panarin, Mark Stone, Matt Duchene, if the Preds could get one of them. By the way, Adam Vinken of The Athletic gave it a 30% chance that they would acquire one of those. You gave it a 40% chance. There are some people that think the Preds might just stand pat, mm-hmm. that they might not do anything, and ESPN's Greg Wyshynski is one of those people.
If you're asking me for percentages or probabilities, I think there's a much greater probability they don't do anything versus doing anything gigantic. Like, They added Boyle and they added McLeod. They added some muscle. And there may be a situation because, you know, you got to remember about David Poile is that there have been times when he's dabbled in the rental market, and there have been times when he's talked about the rental market being something he doesn't like dabbling in. I mean, the prices are too high. The impact can be unpredictable. And although there's a number of really high-end players available, you kind of have to rely on the history that some of these general managers have around the deadline. And David Poile's, perhaps by no fault of his own, I mean, you can only make the trades that are available to you, doesn't seem to be a guy who likes to pay these prices. He likes to seem to be a guy who, if he's swinging for the fences, he's doing it for a player-for-player type trade versus a future assets-for-player type trade. And that's the kind of trade that you see at the deadline, is a lot of draft picks and prospects being shipped out versus, like, the Seth Jones trade, for example.
That was ESPN's Greg Wyshynski earlier this week with Morning Drive, weekday 6 to 10, right here, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Robbie, when you hear that, what goes through your mind?
Well, look, if you take a look at David Poile's history, rental players have not been his favorite thing to do. There's no question about that. I mean, you think back to Peter Forsberg, that was a major move that he made at the time that I feel like he felt he had to make, given what he knew was coming up that summer and the window of opportunity that particular team had to win. I mean, you think back to 2012 when they were in a similar position with a very good team. He brought in a couple guys that were rental players, including Paul Gostad, who he ultimately signed to another contract. But by and large, it has not been a predominant strategy by David Poile to bring in those guys. He's much better and much more comfortable with the straight hockey trades of, you know, your Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson, Shea Weber for P.K. Subban, those type of moves I think he's more comfortable with. But he has also said, and he said this again after he signed Brian Boyle or traded for Brian Boyle and Cody McLeod, you know, there's a certain window of opportunity teams have to win, and they feel like they're in it right now. And he basically said in that press conference, you know, a lot of teams are asking for your first-round pick and a top prospect, and, you know, the pipeline's not great right now, but they're still willing to move on those things because they feel like they have an opportunity to win. So I think if you're David Poile and the Predators, you just have to define, okay, what is the opportunity? How long is that window? Is it this year and next year? Is it 5 years? If you're leaning more towards the 5 or 6 years, maybe you're a little bit more hesitant to pay that heavy price. I'm starting to lean toward it's this year, next year for sure, and then you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's how you have to operate in today's NHL. Things can change so quickly that when you have an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup, which I think everybody would agree this team does, you have to act on that. So that's where I fall under that.
The Athletic had a really, really good story earlier this week, kind of outlining teams that gave up a first-round pick at the deadline for a pure rental,
yeah,
and how it worked out for those 29 teams, I believe, that did that. And only two of those trades resulted in that team winning a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
That's a very low percentage.
Sure.
And first-round picks kind of get tossed around like they're candy this time of year at the trade deadline. And David Poile hasn't had a lot of success giving up that first-round pick in trades. Peter Forsberg back in 07, that team only played 5 games in the playoffs.
Right.
The year before, he gave up a first-round pick for Brendan Witt, defenseman. That team only lasted 5 games in the playoffs. Gave up a first-round pick for Mike Santarelli and Cody Franzen. That didn't work out. Gave up a first-round pick for Paul Gostad. He did bring him back. He did re-sign him. But all those moves at the end of that regular season didn't pan out the way they wanted. I could see David Poile being gun-shy in making this big splash move, but I don't think he will be because of everything that we're hearing and the fact that you said it best, that the cup window right now that they're in, I think it's probably the next 2 to 3 years, in the next 3 postseasons, because yep, that's as long as Pekka is signed for now. And after that, you have no idea. And I made this point last week with Adam Vingan. You don't know if Eli Tolvanen is going to be a part of those 3 postseasons. Right. And if he is, how much of a factor is he really going to be?
Yeah.
And if Eli Tolvanen is the big hangup in a big trade, I'm not all that hesitant in including Tolvanen in a trade like that just because Tolvanen might be this great forward 5 to 10 years from now.
Right.
You have no idea if he's ever going to reach that ceiling that we all think he might have.
Right. And it hadn't been a great start.
And it hasn't been a great start both last year in his cup of coffee with the Preds and now this year with the Milwaukee Admirals. He's been up and down. He is still very young, but he's a mystery box. And you might be able to go get a player, whether it's Panarin, Duchesne, or Stone, or whoever else, that can help you win big, not only this year, but if you don't just get a rental and use Tolvanen, you might be able to get a guy that can help you win a Stanley Cup within that window.
And the other thing to think about is this. I mean, David Poile is the all-time winningest GM in the history of the league, has all these accomplishments. He's never won a Stanley Cup. He just turned 69 years old yesterday. I mean, he's not going to be doing this that much longer, you wouldn't think. So when you have opportunities to win now, like he does, and, you know, you have to, if you're general manager, part of your job is to separate yourself from the situation and look at it logically. That's a lot easier said than done, and David Poile's done a great job of that over the years, and I don't think he would put the franchise at a disadvantage just for personal gain. But I do think there is something in the back of his mind and would be in the back of all of our minds of, all right, I'm 69 years old. I've never won a Stanley Cup before. I've got a pretty good team right now. Just let it ride. Let's go for it.
It's the last thing to complete his historic career as a GM in this league.
Right. So I'm not sure how big of a factor that is, but I do think it is floating around there somewhere that is a factor.
So Greg Wyshynski, we heard the audio clip earlier this segment. Greg Wyshynski thinks that there's a better chance that they don't do anything than they do something. If they don't do anything, Robbie, do you feel like this team currently constructed is good enough to win 16 games in the playoffs?
it's good enough if everybody's firing on all cylinders. The problem is I have not seen everybody firing all cylinders all year. So if that magically happens in the playoffs, which it has done before, sure, they're good enough. Would I expect that to happen this year with this year's team based on what I've seen? No. So for that reason, I think you have to go do something else.
We both agree on that.
So that's where I stand on it. Could they win it? Yes. Do I think they will? No.
Unless they do something. Yeah. Robbie Stanley, NHL.com. Great stuff as always. I appreciate you.
Thank you, sir.
For Robbie Stanley, I'm Ryan Porth. Thank you as always for listening to Preds Insiders. Coming up next, it is Tackling Music City with Buck Rising. Stay tuned.